Yoni Rectum 342. Here we are again on a Monday. I'm Madge Weinstein, fat, fat, bloated, Jewish lesbian. And I'm here with you on Yeast Radio. This is my radio station, or as Way Into Wisdom would say, my program. She says things wrong. And I'm a fat whore, as usual. Nothing new there, nothing new about that. About me being a fat whore, fat bien, as it were. Oh my God, I said as it were. So what you heard there, gentle audience, is the, what do you call that thing? The prelude or whatever for the overture. That's the word I was looking for Fiddler on the Roof. No, I'm just kidding. That was the overture to, The Rosen Cavalier, the opera I saw the other day with Susan Graham. Oh, gentle audience, it was wonderful. Susan Graham just is so amazing. She is an absolutely phenomenal performer. She plays the role of Octavian, and in this and many operas, you know, you have the woman playing a man, and in this one you have the woman playing the young man, but who's also in the show, in the play, the opera masquerading as a woman. And Susan Graham is one of the premier divas at the moment in this country, and she's phenomenal. So Larry, the opera queen, and I, we actually went backstage afterwards and waited for, well, not backstage per se, but in the side of the stage door. We waited there for about an hour until she came out, and she was so graceful and wonderful, and she had this sort of merman-like presence, and she said, you know, by the time she came out, they had already turned the lights off in the hallway to my vagina. No, to I'm getting my vagina excited because she struck me as being slightly lesbonic, if you know what I mean. But that's another story. And what's really wonderful is Susan Graham travels everywhere with a little Sherpa bag and her little poodle in the bag. She keeps a poodle in her bag, general audience. You can't top that. You just can't. And she's so wonderful. But, you know, the other stars came out and they're just like, they just whoosh out. You know, they don't want to be noticed. And then Susan Graham, she comes out and she says, "Hey, why are all the lights off?" It was very Merman-esque. "Hey, who turned all the lights off? Come on." And the security guard said, "Well, they turn off automatically. I can't control them." And Susan said, "Well, let's go in here then." So she was so graceful and she wanted to see all of her fans. And she sat down and she put the dog down with her friends. And we chatted and Larry doted. And I told her how it was, you know, my great Aunt Mary's favorite opera. And it certainly was The Rosencavalier. And that I was finally able to see why. Now, I'd listened to the recording many, many, many times. I've certainly played it on this show a lot. But to really witness it in person was so fucking amazing, gentle turds. You just can't even know it. Well, you should. Maybe I can play the closing trio. It's basically about sort of it's about aging. It's about coming of age. It's about lost love, gained love, things like this. A lot of sexism going on. And at the end of this whole opera is a trio between basically the older woman who Octavian, the mezzo, Susan Graham's character, which is a boy in the play, falls in love with first, who is the marshal, and she's like a field marshal's wife, which is, I guess, like a general over there in the Germany before they killed all my people. But and she just has these exquisite costumes. She's so graceful. She's in this huge house, and she's having this sex with the an affair with the Carabino. I'm thinking of La Nozze di Figaro, but with Octavian. And then and he pledges her love for her, and she says, "You know what? Bullshit, you know, you're just like any other guy. You're just going to forget about me and find somebody else really soon." So literally the next day he finds Sophie, who he's supposed to deliver the rose, the Rosencavalier, which is a silver rose. And he's supposed to deliver it to this woman, Sophie, as it's sort of this aristocratic tradition where the one guy who is not Octavian proposed to her without having met her, sort of like an arranged marriage thing. But the guy that was supposed to marry her is this ugly fool. So I keep saying Carabino. Octavian goes to deliver the rose, and that's why he's called the Rosencavalier, again being played by Susan Graham, who I suspect is a lesbian because she lives in Santa Fe, general audience. She has a house in Santa Fe. Plus, there were several lesbian fans waiting for her with us, about four. You know, so that's... I don't have any clue if she's a lesbian. I'm just saying that because I wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings when I like them so much, like Susan Graham. She's a wonderful performer. The dog is wonderful. She travels with a dog, general audience. Who can beat that? Oh, by the way, for the serious listeners, well, everybody can hear this, but this might make sense to you. I haven't heard it yet, but I think someone has an apology to make.
Hi, Madge. This is P-Dub. I fucked up. I not only fucked up, I fucked up your show.
Yeah.
This past Friday, the 10th, Adam decided to take a whole hour for himself, which pushed the whole schedule back a half hour.
Asshole.
Well,
so it's really
this
his
threw
fault.
My whole routine off. But I was very careful, and I made all the adjustments I needed to make it all come out right for Sirius.
Uh-huh.
However, in the confusion, I mislabeled the two halves of your show, and they wound up playing ass backwards. Second half hour played first, first half hour played second. I am mortified. I am allowing my wife to shave the word loser in my ass hair as
punishment. Why don't you leave her shave you?
Oy, gavolt.
Have her shave you, your balls. Well, that was a nice apology. Thank you for blaming Adams Curry on your mistake, which is basically what you did. Although you did admit you mislabeled the thing. P.W. Fenton, I'm afraid I can never, ever forgive you. I'm burning my bra for you. No, actually, I don't give a shit. It was funny. This, and by the way, P-Dub, this Dave's Call to Bank anniversary cunt march song played by accident. I set off two clips at once, but it seemed appropriate. Again.
Cunt.
All right, that's Dave's Call to Bank. And by the way, P.W. Fenton has two podcasts, Digital Flotsam, which is it's sort of a gold standard of podcasting, and the new one, Perfect Head, which is for alcoholics. And no, it's very good. It's a music show. And what else? Oh, Roger Smalls called me. Biggie Smalls is a younger, retarded British cousin. By the way, this reminds me, when I hear Roger talk, it reminds me, everybody should watch this TV show called Footballers' Wives. It is the best fucking show. It's like soccer moms on crack. It is so good. I think it might be what Desperate Housewives was based on, because it started 3 years before Desperate Housewives. I got to figure out, somebody tell me how I can get the entire like five seasons or whatever it is. I have to have it. They're hard to find on BitTorrent and whatever. I need every episode of the soccer house. What is it called? Footballers' Wives. I've got to have it. Get it for me. All I do for you. God damn it. Do it for me.
Hello, Madge. Roger here. Now, I'm sorry, but I want to disagree with you about something, about employing the gays to play cowboys on Brokeback Mountain. I think what it boils down to is the fact that actors are called actors because they have to act. They'd just be playing themselves, and that would just be them playing cameo roles. On the other side of the fence, you get gays and lesbians like Ian McKellen and Pam St. Clement playing straight people. So I don't know what you're getting so upset about. You're probably sitting there swearing at me right now, but I think someone's got to disagree with you for once. Most of the videos that I download all star lesbian actresses, so I don't think that things are as bad as you make out. You've got to look on the positive side of things.
Oh, you douche.
Some of the straight actors could start acting a bit more gay and then realise that they are. You never know. Anyway, I hope I've given you something to think about. Don't be angry with me.
Get fucked.
I just want you to look on the positive side of
things.
Bye for now.
Roger, you know what? I don't mind when people disagree with me. People disagree with me all the time. In fact, on this issue, probably 95... I was just talking to Reagan about it. Reagan happens to agree with me. Probably every other person that's written in about this issue disagrees with me. So I don't know what you think you're setting some new standard by disagreeing. No, that doesn't bother me. However, what does bother me, Rodgerd, is... That you say be positive. And that's the kind of bullshit that I can't stand. When I used to work at Philips in Holland, people would say, be positive in that awful Dutch accent. Be positive, be positive. What does that fucking mean? It means get AIDS. Be positive means be HIV positive. So don't wish AIDS on me, Roger Smalls. I don't appreciate that. And talk about homophobic. I feel like you just wrapped up my case for me by telling me to get AIDS. At the same time, you're saying it's okay for gay actors to play straight or whatever, or straight actors to play gay actors. Now, here's the problem, Rodgerd. If it were just once in a while that this happens, it would be one thing. But look at top-billed actors in this country, in America, and the ones that win the Academy Award. Not a single one is gay, openly gay. And if they're in the closet, that doesn't do anything for the gay cause, and that's not gay. If they're in the closet, as far as I'm concerned, they're straight. As far as the gay community is concerned, they're straight. Now, how offensive. So, yeah, if this were just an anomaly, that would be one thing. But this Bareback Mountain thing is symbolic. And the tranny, talking tranny, the movie, or whatever the fuck it was. You know, if it were an anomaly, that would be one thing. But it's not. It is absolutely the standard, the norm. And there's no exceptions. You know, and then you hear like I think, so, I, what I don't understand, I was talking with Reagan about this today, too. Why is it that sort of every queen I know has the sort of built-in sort of mechanism that defends the Hollywood industry for making this decision constantly? And this is not a one-time thing. You know, people say, well, you know, they were the best actors for the part, so sexuality doesn't matter. Well, give me a break. You know, how come every single time it's a straight actor that's best for the part? Are you saying that gay actors aren't as good? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. There are no gay actors that are top billed, no stars. So, you know, so we're being discriminated against. And I don't see how you can deny that. I mean, yeah, those actors were very good. And if Bareback Mountain were one thing, that would be fine. But look, and then even when the talking tranny was talking about it the other day, and I asked her, well, what is it about, you know, why don't you think it would be successful if it had a tranny in Transamerica, a tranny playing a tranny? And she said, well, I just don't think people would go to see it. You know, it wouldn't be popular. Well, then it's sort of hypocritical then of you to say that it doesn't matter who, you know, that you're just acting. If it really doesn't matter, then why can't we have gay roles? The fact that it's only straight people playing gay people proves that it does matter. It does matter. You know, it's like, it would be, like I mentioned before, The Color Purple being played by all white people. It wouldn't make sense. Or Barbershop, you know, with Jewish white people, you know, like I'd be down with that thing. Yo, give me some Knedlach, Queen Latifah. I need a haircut for my afro. Oh, you don't have an afro. Well, we'll just pretend. You know, it's you have to look at the big picture, which is that it's happening every time. It is discrimination, and it's obvious. Good Christ. Good Christ almighty with a Chris. Oh, no, now I'm going to make that fucking Steve Webb mad. He said he believes in Jesus, so he wants nobody to take his name in vain or whatever. You know, I don't have time for that shit. I don't have time for that fucking shit, you know? If you want to be pious on your own show, but then he's telling Adams Curry that he can't say Christ on his show. But I'm thinking about a creative way to deal with this, but you'll hear more about that as time comes through. It's not something bad. It's actually kind of nice. Let's see. I'm a fat whore. I am. Mm-hmm. I need a drink of water, so perhaps I'll play Norman. Oh, yeah, Norman. Ooh. Oh, fuck. I didn't play it loud enough. That's not Norman, but let me try.
How would you like me to handle your balls? Gently?
I don't know who that is. I found that on Evil Vlog once, and it just kind of stayed on my thing. You know what I mean? It stayed on. Stay down. How down, how down, how de do, how de do. Prolapse, prolapse, don't prolapse that vagina. Save some for a friend. All right, I'm going to play Finn and Norm, Norm Augustinus, and I'm going to turn on the lavalier. Should I do that now so I can walk around? Hello, lavalier here. Lavalier, getting interference on the lavalier. Let me turn this light off. Maybe that'll help. And then we're going to turn on the Norman. I don't know how long this piece is today. It sent a strange email with it. Let me read the email first, because it's weird. Hi, Madge. Norman, I'm masturbating. Sorry, I wasn't supposed to read that one out loud. Hi, Madge. Pulitzer Prize winning author Art Buchwald in hospice in Washington via phone. He recently quit dialysis and is basically just waiting to pass. Thanks so much, Madge. Now, that's weird. Okay, that's really weird. I have no idea what it is, and here it is.
Hi, Madge. Hey, hi. Madge, world-renowned satire writer Art Buchwald was recently awarded the 2006 Ernie Pyle Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Society of Newspaper Columnists. Uh-huh. He's written over 30 books, Madge. Mr. Buchwald is syndicated in around 300 newspapers. In 1982, Art Buchwald was a recipient of the Pulitzer Prize, Madge.
And the cock.
Unfortunately, Madge, Mr. Buchwald, who is now 80 years old, isn't doing so well. About a month ago, he stopped dialysis treatments, which were keeping him alive. And he's recently had his leg amputated below the knee and also has diabetes. I caught up with Mr. Buchwald, Madge, at the Washington Home and Hospice in Washington, D.C.
You've got to be kidding me.
Where I called him directly via telephone.
Oh, my God.
Now, Madge, as of this production, March 12th, Mr. Buchwald was still alive. He's weak, Madge, but still sharp. The interview's kind of dicey. Here's how my call went.
Good morning to Washington Home and Hospice. May I help you?
Hi, sir. My name is Norm Augustinus. I'm a writer calling from Florida. Does Mr. Buchwald taking calls still or no?
Hold on, please.
How do?
Community Hospice of Washington.
Hi, ma'am. I'd like to speak to Art Buchwald. He's on the first floor, ma'am.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I'm going to transfer you to another line. You can talk to him.
Weird accent.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate that.
I'll shut up. Sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey,
okay. Sir, my name is Norm Augustinus. I'm a journalism graduate. I live in Florida, and I've been writing for years, sir. But can I record you, sir?
Yeah.
I had heard about your thing, Mr. Buchwald, and I wanted to tell you how much I'm going to miss you, sir.
Appreciate that.
I just think you're fantastic, Mr. Buchwald. My father introduced me to you.
Oh, really?
And he followed your stuff regularly. I read your book,
leaving home.
Oh.
And my dad was in a service, sir. He got out in 1945.
Well, that's right.
I didn't know why I wanted to call you. I'm a writer. And I thought, if I can talk to him 2 seconds to tell him how much he meant to a younger guy.
Oh.
Mr. Buchwald, my father had
a similar thing.
He lost his leg with diabetes. He went on dialysis, sir. And then he said, I'd had enough of dialysis, and he just signed
Isn't
a paper and stopped it.
Thank you so much for this call.
Mr. Buchwald, if you had any advice for a writer, what would the...
I have none, because I don't even know what I'm doing in this business. Thank you.
That's about it, Madge. This is your favorite correspondent, Norm Augustinus from Florida, on Art Buchwald.
Well, that was probably the most exploitative moment in Yeast Radio history. Thank you for that, Norman. Very nice. Very nice to hear what might be the last public words of Art Buchwald. Oh, what a slap in the face to a marvelous career, isn't it? To be like, your final words are, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing anymore on Yeast Radio. That was a new low, but that's wonderful, though. Thank you, Norman. You're doing great with these wonderful phone calls and everything you've been doing for me for so many months now. I'm a fat lesbian whore. Fat lesbian whore. Fat lesbian whore. Oh, yeah. All right. I got to play. I'm going to talk. I'm going to switch to the lavalier again. I said I was going to switch before. I didn't switch, general audience. Here I am. Now I'm on the lavalier microphone. And I'm finna walk around. Hi, Vay. I'm making my Jerry Blank sounds. How could you not like Jerry Blank? By the way, I'm referring to Strangers with Candy, which is a television show. Let's see here. Okay, so... Right. Hi ho the Dario. Anyway, I'd like to talk about my vagina. I made beans. Oh, Miss Panang, John Ong is in town. And he's here with his boyfriend. And they went to go see Wicked, that wonderful musical which I've raved about in the past. Raved about it. It's so fucking wonderful. And so he and his boyfriend are going to see it, and then we're going to the Viet Mernese place that Wanda Wisdom likes. You know, Wanda Wisdom, I know it's hard to grasp, but Wanda says Viet Mernese instead of Vietnamese because she's kind of retarded. She doesn't know how to speak. God, that just reminded me, I'm pouring some water. I had this dream in which I was trying to read an account number over the phone for something. I don't remember what it was, some ordinary thing. And I was in a cab or a house in my dream, and I couldn't say the number. You know, I just kept mixing up the numbers, you know, like, I kept telling the operator, I'm dyslexic. And she didn't find any humor in it. But, boy, my dreams have been so, they've had a lot of gussy in them, you know, a lot of gussy. And my month mourning period, my intense mourning period ended yesterday. So, I think like these dreams that they're very sort of, I don't know, they're weird, you know, they're positive dreams. Like I really feel like in some ways that I have Gussie back in the dreams, you know, because it feels like it's the same thing. And well, what's her face? Noah of the Penis Explosion came over. He's giving me these yoga classes. I gotta send him the check. And during the yogurt, you know, you're going through these businesses, you know, the downs, the ups, the upside downs, and all that. And you know, the yoga poses, the goddess, the yoni pose, and all that. So, oh, by the way, I had to name, you notice at the beginning of the show, I had to say the name of my yoni rectum, which is like me, it's me copying Adam's curry, except I'm using names that are vaginal instead of penile, like him, because he's a sexist. Anyway. Agua. So Miss Panang is gonna call, and then I forgot what I was gonna talk about. Okay, let's see here. Hey, honey. All right, let's find the final trio from the Rosen Cavalier. that I was telling you about. So this is when, what happens in this, and this is the end, is what you have is the three divas. You've got the Sophie, who's the young bride-to-be for Octavian, who's the mezzo-soprano. And we have the Marshalon, which is this beautiful, you know, but aging field marshal's wife, and she's just so glamorous. And basically, they say, it's like Keen, which is the nickname for what's-his-face, Octavian, is saying, well, you know, I guess I love both of you. It's a shame that I really do love both of you, but I'm going to go with the younger one. And the older one is saying, well, you know, this is life and this is how it is when you get old. And so, but it's such a beautiful trio. It's probably one of the most beautiful trios in all of opera. And I don't mean a trio like one of those stupid phones. All right, let's see here. I got to find it. Bear with me here. Oh, fuck. I got to deal with this shit now. Hold on. I don't know where I am. gentle audience, tell me that wasn't just wonderful. I mean, if that doesn't inspire you to start listening and going to opera, I don't know what will. Oh, so that was Aunt Mary's favorite opera, and it's called The Rosenkavalier by Richard Strauss. And I strongly recommend that you buy a recording of it and listen to it. It is wonderful. And read along the libretto. It's just a wonderful love story. It's so nice, and it's really just a way to get away. And that's why I like these kinds of operas the most, because it just takes you to another place. All right. Hello. Okay, now I'm on the Lavalier. I had to review that and listen to it again because it was so good. I'm waiting for Miss Panang to pick me up with her boyfriend. And meanwhile, I'm just going to finna talk because I need to get her done. You know, as they say in the South, get her done. I used to have a speech teacher. Oh, by the way, the performers in that were Regina Crespin, Yvonne Minton, and Helen Donath. This is an old recording, and George Solti conducted it. Let's see, what year is this? Let's see here. Weinerstraut, 1969. All right, I was a beautiful girl in 1969, believe it or not. We Jews don't age well, but we're pretty when we're young. Let's see. I'm flossing. So I wanted to finish tell you, I didn't finish talking about the yogurt with Pootie Go-Gurt with Noah from the PNS Explosion. So he's my yoga teacher now, and he comes over. And it's funny because it's like a special deal because I just pay for me, but the dogs get to yoga too. And it's very interesting to watch because the dogs just lick and, yeah, it's funny. Anyway, but as I was doing the yoga, I guess there's this part where you have to like pretend you're dead for a while. I don't know these words, you know, ask the Noah from the Penis Explosion about it. But, so you have to pretend you're dead or something. Oh, I'm not going to explain this. But so I lie down, you know, when he puts this towel on my head like I'm dead or something. And I felt like I was dead. And I thought, well, maybe I'm, you know, I felt like in some weird way, like I was related to my beloved ex. Well, do you call somebody ex if they're dead? My former lover. No. My no longer alive life partner. Gussie Iskowitz, you know. And, you know, there is consolation in the fact that everybody dies, so I know that sounds weird. But it's like my friend Larry the Opera Queen says, you know, look on the bright side, Madge, the world is ending. And, you know, it makes sense. I'm still flossing. Let's read this Tennyson business, since we're on the subject of teeth. Okay. In Memoriam. Oof. Why the fuck did she give me this to read? Well, whatever. Strong Son of God, immortal love, whom we, that have not seen thy face, by faith and faith alone embrace, believing where we cannot prove. Thine are these orbs of light and shade. Thou madest life in man and brute. Thou madest death, and lo, thy foot is on the skull which thou hast made. Thou wilt not leave us in the dust. Thou madest man, he knows not why. He thinks he was not made to die. And thou hast made him. Thou art just. Thou seemest human and divine, the highest, holiest manhood, thou. Our wills and ours, we know not how. Our wills are ours, to make them thine. Our little systems have their day. They have their day and cease to be. They are but broken lights of thee, and thou, O Lord, art more than they. We have but faith we cannot know, for knowledge is of things we see, and yet we trust it comes from thee. A beam in darkness let it grow, let knowledge grow from more to more, but more of reverence in us dwell, that mind and soul according well may make one music as before. But vaster, we are fools and slight, we mock thee when we do not fear. But help thy foolish ones to bear, help thy vain worlds to bear thy light. Forgive what seemed my sin in me, what seemed my worth since I began, for merit lives from man to man, and not from man, O Lord, to thee. Forgive my grief for one removed, thy creature whom I found so fair. I trust he lives in thee, and there I find him worthier to be loved. Forgive these wild and wandering cries, confusions of wasted youth. Forgive them where they fail in truth. And ill thy wisdom make me wise. I held the truth with him who sings to one clear harp in diverse tones, that men may rise on stepping stones of their dead selves to higher things. But who shall forecast for the years and find in loss a gain to match, or reach a hand through time to catch the far-off interest of tears? Let love clasp grief, lest loath both be drowned. Let darkness keep her raven gloss. Ah, sweeter to be drunk with loss, to dance with death, to beat the ground, than that the victor ours should scorn the long result of love and boast. Behold the man that loved and lost, but all he was is overworn. Old you, which graspest at the stone, that name underlying dead, thy fibers in the net the dreamless head, thy roofs are wrapped about the bones, the seasons bring the flower again and bring the firstling to the flock, and in the dust of thee the clock beats out the little lives of men. Oh, not for thee the glow, the bloom, who changest not in any gale, nor branding summer suns avail, to touch thy thousand years of gloom, and gazing on thee, sullen tree, sick for thy stubborn hardihood, I seem to fail from out my blood and grow incorporate into thee. O sorrow, cruel fellowship, O priestess in the vaults of death, O sweet and bitter in a breath, what whispers from thy lying lip? The stars, she whispers, blindly run, a web is woven across the sky. From out waste places comes a cry and murmurs from the dying sun. And all that phantom nurture sands, with all the music in her tone, a hollow echo of my own, a hollow form with empty hands, And shall I take a thing so blind, embrace her as my natural good, or crush her like a vice of blood upon the threshold of the mind? To sleep I give my powers away. My will is bondsman to the dark. I sit within a helmless bark. And with my heart I muse and say, O heart, how fares it with thee now, that thou shouldest fail from thy desire, who scarcely darest to inquire, what is it that makes me beat so low? Something it is which thou hast lost, some pleasure from thine early years. Break, thou deep vase of chilling tears, that grief hath shaken into frost. Such clouds of nameless trouble cross all night below the darkened skies. With morning wakes the will and cries, thou shalt not be the fool of loss. What time is it? Okay, I got time. Oy vey. I sometimes hold it half a sin to put in words the grief I feel, for words like nature half reveal and half conceal the soul within. But for the unquiet heart and brain, a use in measured language lies, the sad mechanic exercise, like dull narcotics numbing pain. In words like weeds I'll wrap me o'er, like coarsest clothes against the cold. But that large grief which these enfold is given in outline and no more. One writes that other friends remain, that loss is common to the race, and common is the commonplace, and vacant chaff well meant for grain. That loss is common would not make my own loss, my own less bitter, rather more too common. Never morning wore to evening, but some heart did break. O Father, where sower oust thou be, who pledgest now thy gallant son, a shot ere half thy drought be done, hath stilled the life that beat from thee. O mother, praying God will save thy sailor, while thy head is bowed, his heavy-shotted hammock shroud drops in his vast and wandering grave. Yet no more than I who wrought, at that last hour to please him well, who mused on all I had to tell, and something written, something thought, expecting still his advent home, and ever met him on his way, with wishes thinking, here today or here tomorrow will he come. Or somewhere meek conscious unconscious dove, that sittest ranging golden hair, and glad to find thyself so fair, poor child that waitest for thy love. For now her father's chimney glows, in expectation of a guest, and thinking this will please him best, she takes a riband or a rose, for he will see them on tonight. I'm bored now. Sorry. It's too much. You can go read that yourself. That's Tennyson. Tennyson, it's like tennis with a Y. It's like women with a Y. Anyway, that was interesting for a while, and then my ADD took over. General audience, you know, deal with it. Like you're going to get me to be poignant for more than 5 minutes. Anyway, we're going to go get the Viet Mernese with John Ong. What else this week? Oy vey. So my morning period is over, which means I have to do some work. I've got some things I need to get done for the pod show people and for myself. And I need to wash my ass. And really, I really need to start going to the exercise more often. I got to exercise. And it's not about losing the weight, even though I'm at the maximum size at the Lane Bryant. It's about breathing, deep breathing, and getting more vaginal orgasms. I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, I'm still in it. I guess I'm still soaking in it. You know? I mean, it would be nice for the grief to end when it's supposed to end. But it's not supposed to end, right? Or is it? I don't know. It was supposed to end today. It was a month, right? It's a month. It's a month. It was supposed to end, the grieving. But for some reason, I keep coming back to the thought that, like, how on earth could I ever date someone else? Like, I just can't imagine. It seems like if I date anybody else, I'm just going to hold them up to the Gussie Iskowitz standard, you know? Which is, I know it sounds weird because as much as I complained about her and shit, you know, and being crazy, but, you know. You know, none of that means anything, really. None of it, the complaining. You know, that's just being Jewish. That's just being Jewish. You always complain. And your meanness to the ones you like the most. But a lot of people don't figure that out until it's too late. Let's see here. What else? I'm going to leave with the presentation of the rose. And let's see, from the Rosen Cavalier again. And if we don't get through it, you're going to have to listen again. This is when Octavian delivers the rose to Sophie and is instantly in love with her. This is the younger woman he falls in love with this time. Where's the goddamn switch, fucking whore? God, I don't have all this fucking time. Okay, they're getting ready to come.
Stop.